All right, everybody, it's Juneteenth. We're going to talk about that for a little bit. Plus, the Oscars has new diversity rules. A submarine venturing out to see the Titanic has gone missing. There's a Joe Rogan podcast debate that is possibly happening. And we've got some more news on top of that. Let's get into it. All right, guys, happy Monday, or should I say happy Juneteenth. Welcome to the show. We're here at 1 p.m. Pacific today because we've changed the time. We're now going to be starting this show earlier at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, for those of you who do not know. So we're moving the show up 2 hours. I hope you're happy with that. We certainly are. It means we're going to get more done and be able to talk to you more, create more content for you guys. Let's get into Juneteenth. And before we do that, Taylor's in Nashville.
Oh, hey, waiting for that morning coffee too. Well, I'm usually 2 coffees in by this point when we do the show, so I got to figure out if I have to have my second one before.
Right. We're here. We're getting it together, guys. This is going to be a little bit of an adjustment period for us. Scott is in the producer's bay.
What's up, everyone? I'm usually 2 pots of coffee through the day at this point.
But we're chilling. It's going to be good. Let's talk about Juneteenth. For those of you who don't know, today, Monday, June 19th, is Juneteenth, a day, now, I believe, federal holiday, where we are meant to celebrate the emancipation of the slaves. And it's gone through its period, right? Juneteenth was, you know, created and then became a federal holiday. And now it's at the point where some people take off work. I called my health insurance this morning to try and book a doctor's appointment and see if a doctor was a network, and they're like, we are off observing the holiday. So I couldn't call my health insurance because it's Juneteenth.
Wow.
And here I am just trying to talk to a representative, just screaming at my phone.
Yeah.
but it's neither here nor there. Clearly, we're working on Juneteenth. We are not observing this holiday currently. Let me know what your Juneteenth celebration looks like. We put out a video over the weekend that says you're meant to create a safe space for people of color to talk about their experiences, to talk about their view of history, how it has affected their life, how the emancipation has affected them and their families, and a bunch of do's and don'ts. You can check that out on our channel here. I want to play this video from CBS Mornings, because apparently one of their hosts did not show up because he was observing Juneteenth. Let's watch it.
Happy Juneteenth to you. Is it lost on anybody that the only white guy at the table is off today is to celebrate Juneteenth? And we're still here. Glad to be here.
We are glad to be here.
I hope Tony's enjoying his Juneteenth holiday.
Oh boy.
Welcome to CBS Mornings.
Meanwhile, we are glad that you have all joined us on this holiday.
Tony, we love you.
Yeah. We do.
We do.
Really,
we really
do.
Love each other.
We do.
We got a lot to share with you.
Oh my gosh, talk about taking advantage of a day off work. The one white guy was like, yo, it's Juneteenth. I need to go do something to celebrate. And the 3 black hosts are left behind. You know what? If you're going to make it a holiday, that's what you're going to get, right?
Is he supposed to not observe it? I don't understand what the criticism is.
I don't know. Apparently, you're supposed to let black people observe it, and specifically foundational black Americans. So those who are descendant of slaves should take priority on Juneteenth as they are most affected by the emancipation, and thusly should have the most privilege when it comes to the Juneteenth holiday. What are you two doing for black people today?
I am producing their shows and podcasts.
Yeah. I am running the boards.
Working hard.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. However, I'm not a descendant of slaves, so you have to go find somebody is and do something about that. So that's your project for today.
That's why we started earlier today, so I have time to go do that.
After the show, that's where Scott and Taylor are going to be. We have another video from a young woman who is telling us what needs to be done on Juneteenth and actually seems to have a problem with the holiday. Let's hear from her.
Juneteenth becoming an official holiday felt like a win at first, but now it really just feels like a slap in the face. Like, yeah, people get the day off, but those people are often white people who work in government jobs or in big offices, but people who work in service jobs, like a lot of black folk, have to go to work. What sense does that make? It's like, hey, congrats on your freedom. Don't forget to clock into work today because I'm going to have to go to the grocery store and buy stuff for my cookout to celebrate your liberation. What sense does that make? And some places are starting to use white models instead of black models in their ads for Juneteenth.
I just want to pause there.
Why?
I can nearly guarantee that no white person is doing a cookout for Juneteenth. So, rest assured, that is not something that you have to worry about. I don't think even black people getting the day off for Juneteenth are having a cookout celebration for the emancipation. I'm so sorry. You might find a few. But at the end of the day, to most people, it's just a day off work. I love Scott and Taylor are both making the same face, right? They're just like...
Yeah, we didn't even know what Juneteenth was before a couple of years ago. Maybe that's ignorance, but I just feel like culturally it was not a big deal, not something that the average American was in tune with. And then all of a sudden, I guess in the wake of the BLM and George Floyd 2020 stuff, we're all like even more hypersensitive than ever about racial issues. And then all of a sudden somebody decided we need to federalize this and make it a giant deal. But this is the problem. She said it felt like a win at first. This is the problem when you make holidays based on virtue signaling. It's no surprise that it didn't suddenly transform race relations or the black experience in America because we're more focused on virtue signaling or even white people virtue signaling than actually getting down to the issues, which is kind of her point. But also, like, why did we celebrate this at the beginning in the get-go? We knew it was going to end here,
right? And here's the thing, it's not to say that nobody's like proud of the emancipation. Everybody acknowledges that that's a great thing. We're teaching it in our schools, we're having conversations surrounding the transgression of slavery and its emancipation, so that is being done. It's like tacking on a Juneteenth holiday is, again, it's just going to be end up being a day off work. And for the most part, that's what happens with every holiday, right? Did anybody really do more than like a social media post for Memorial Day? No, but a lot of you got the day off work. Is the same thing going to happen with like July 4th? Yeah, people are going to say like, you know, happy Independence Day or whatever, but then they're just going to hang out at home. And that is just what federal holidays end up being. She goes on to say some more. Let's hear what she thinks needs to be done on Juneteenth.
And on top of that, what are we actually doing to benefit Black people? There's still no reparations. Maternal mortality rates are still high in the Black community. Still haven't done anything about police brutality. Like, what's the point? A beautiful intra-community holiday became something else that white people swooped in and took for themselves in the name of being woke. So if you're not an African American and you have Juneteenth off, please do something to actually benefit the Black community. Anything.
What does that even mean? What are you supposed to do? You please tell me, because then you go and do something and you're like, I'm going to do something for Black people. And then they're going to say they feel patronized by you. And it's going to be a whole nother thing. And like, what are you supposed to do? You tell me what are they supposed to have a Juneteenth rally or something? Are they supposed to go pay reparations on the day of Juneteenth to some random Black people in their community? Please let me know what is meant to happen on this holiday, because I have no clue.
Yeah, I don't know, but this kind of gives the energy of, you know, during the whole riots and everything of 2020 going on, it feels like, you know, there were those moments where we all saw on social media large groups of mostly white people bending the knee in honor and asking for forgiveness for mm-hmm. past transgressions. I feel like this is kind of a similar energy that is what is maybe wanted, but not expressed out loud in voice. And like, I feel like that's kind of a weird ask that's kind of hidden in this,
yeah,
in this messaging.
And I mean, they've been given every platform to like talk about all these different things. Look at all the reparations task force that are happening right now, where there's just a bunch of Black people all sitting in a room arguing about whether or not it should be $250,000 or $3 million given to each Black American, like to somehow come forward and say that Black issues are not being focused on in the current society when it's virtually everything that anyone is talking about at any given moment just really blows my mind. My boyfriend and I went to a comedy show once, to see Tony Rock, and he brought up this joke about Juneteenth. And I am dating a white man from Australia who would have no idea what Juneteenth is, because guess what? In Australia, they don't celebrate Juneteenth because it's an American holiday. So he brought up Juneteenth and looks at my boyfriend and goes like, do you know what Juneteenth is? He's like, no. And he makes this whole joke of like, how are you dating a Black woman and you don't know what Juneteenth is and blah, 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 because it's not the focus of my life. The only reason I know what Juneteenth is because woke leftists talk about it every single year and then we have to have a conversation surrounding it. That's literally it. That is literally it. And again, it's not to say that we should not be happy about the emancipation of slaves. It's just to say that I think this holiday functions as just like making it such a focal point and reinforcing this idea of black oppression in the modern day.
Right. That's what it is. They're weaponizing this, what would be an event in history that everyone would celebrate. But instead of portraying it today and celebrating it today in a way that is really about the essence of, hey, we ended slavery, we progressed past this, it's more being used as a weapon to bludgeon everyone over the head with this new racial ideology, these grievances, and, we don't have enough reparations yet, and blah, blah, blah. And it's not about moving on or celebrating progress in any kind of way. They've made it about revisiting the grievances and reminding ourselves of how terrible America is and how long it took us to abolish slavery and how bad the black experience is in modern times. And it's like, this is not what the goal of a holiday should be. This should be aspirational. This should be like uniting. And instead it's just causing more, they're using it to cause more division. So again, like you said, I welcome a celebration to the end of slavery, but we all really know that when it comes down to it, that's not what most of the people pushing this stuff and enshrining it are really about. And that's even evidenced in that first video we watched. It's like, oh, the white guy's off. It's like, let's stop focusing on all that, man.
Right.
It's just annoying.
Everything is becoming racialized. Speaking of that, perfect segue into what we're going to talk about with the CNN tweet. CNN started to get into the whole Father's Day talk by putting out this tweet. Black fathers are often portrayed as absent or distant, and that isn't what most people experience, according to data and black dads themselves. Such biased portrayals are often based on who is telling the story. So here's the tweet that they put out. I believe this got a community note, which the community note is no longer underneath the tweet, so I'm not sure exactly what happened there, but here is the community note. Percentage of children living absent their biological fathers. Black children, 64%. Hispanic children, 42%. White children, 24%. Asian children, 16%. So the percentages are high in every single category, but it is probably worth noting, given the nature of their tweet, that in the category of black children, the number is 64%, which would in fact constitute a majority. So can we just acknowledge it? Can we say it? Because if we don't acknowledge it, then we're not acknowledging that it could be a problem that is afflicting the lives of young black children. And not just young black children. I'm saying look at these numbers. Look at the number of Hispanic, white, Asians, of course, are at the bottom of the list doing better than the other three. But these are concerning numbers all across the board. Why can't we just acknowledge on Father's Day? And why can't CNN acknowledge on Father's Day? Fathers are needed in the house, period. And we as a society should be working to reinforce that idea and have more two-parent households being created and built in this country. Simple as that. But instead, they had to tweet out, what is a lie? And then say, we've got data and black dads told us so as well. Make it make sense. Make it make sense, y'all. It's just constant lies and just shifting of the narrative with Juneteenth, with Father's Day, with all this stuff. And they can't help themselves but do it. And I'm wondering what happened to that community note that was underneath it. But it was a fact check that was needed nonetheless. Scott, how was your first Father's Day?
It was awesome. I actually got absolutely roasted. If you can't tell, I look like a lobster right now by the sun. My skin saw the sun for the first time in quite a while, but
yeah.
An incredible weekend, and I can't wait for many more, hopefully. Aww. God willing.
Congratulations. Give a congratulations to Scott in the chat as it is his first Father's Day. Also, like this video if you haven't so far. Now we're going to talk about the title of the stream today, and that is the Oscars. We've covered this briefly on the show before. But the Oscars, which I wasn't watching, but now I'm going to not watch even harder, has inclusivity rules that it's now put in to qualify for Best Picture in 2024. And it's going to say, basically, that films must make, quote, underrepresented, end quote, groups 30% of the cast, the main actors, or the plot of the entire story. So here's the category. It says A1. lead or significant supporting actors. At least one of the lead actors or significant supporting actors is from an underrepresented racial or ethnic group. Asian, Hispanic, Black, Indigenous, Middle Eastern, Native Hawaiian, or other represented race or ethnicity. So that's who you have to cast for your lead actor or a significant supporting role. Then it says A2, general ensemble cast. At least 30% of all characters in secondary or more minor roles are from at least two of the following underrepresented groups: women, racial or ethnic group, LGBTQ+, people with cognitive or physical disabilities who are deaf or hard of hearing. A3, main storyline or subject matter. The main storyline's theme or narrative of the film is centered on an underrepresented group: women, racial or ethnic group, LGBTQ, people with cognitive or physical disabilities. So this is the requirement. You have to meet, I believe, one of the three here in order to qualify your film for Best Picture at the Oscars. This blows my mind, right? For a group of people who claim to be all about creativity and artistry and following whatever storyline is specific to yourself or your own creativity, to be able to mandate what people do with their piece of art for the Oscars in order to qualify for this, this should completely knock them out as any sort of legitimate institution. This lacks all legitimacy. As soon as you tell an artist what exactly they're supposed to do with their art, you've ruined the very nature of the art itself. But this is what they're going to do now. Well, this is quite literally forced diversity. You know, we watch movies that are made over the past 5 years and we go, there's a lot of diversity in them and it feels forced. It doesn't feel like it came natural to them. It doesn't feel like this was a natural storyline for them. It felt like they took a story that could have been great and injected their own personal beliefs and personal agenda into it. And now we have literal evidence for forced diversity. They're telling them exactly what they have to do. Scott loves film, obviously, and studied film. How do you feel about this? I know Oscars is like the pinnacle of somebody in film's career.
Yeah. I mean, you get an Oscar, that's like winning the MVP in any sports league or anything along those lines. And this is, to your point, as you were stating right there, they've literally thrown the baby out with the bathwater. This is no longer about the art at all. It's all about what brought about what will be low quality art because of these benchmarks that are needed. And honestly, this feels like a taxidermist taking a live, living, young, fresh being, having it killed, taking out the insides, and then just making it this hollow husk of what it once was.
Yeah.
And you know, it's lost its blood, it's lost its life, it's lost its heart, it's lost all of what made it so great in the first place. And this is incredibly sad to see. And I hope at the end of the day, this creates some other sort of I don't know, call it ranking system or award community or organization that comes out and at least just speaks directly to the art that is being made and, you know, does so with respect to the artists themselves, not anything beyond that. So I hope there's a sliver of hope coming through this that I think some grass will grow out of the cracks of this terrible, terrible asphalt.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of, let's think of some major movies that do not meet these standards that could no longer be made. West Side Story, which was nominated for, I can't even tell you how many Oscars the year that it came out, would not qualify under these pretenses.
The OG one, right?
Yep, the OG. Yeah. The OG West Side Story would not qualify. The New York Post writes here, The Godfather would not qualify under these circumstances. Movies like, let's look for some space. Titanic would not qualify under these pretenses. Gladiator.
Saving Private Ryan.
Yep.
Braveheart, Lord of the Rings.
The Patriot. None of these movies would qualify.
All I have to do is list my favorite movies. And
Right. But what does? Let's see. Maybe She-Hulk. That's a TV show. So I guess that doesn't even qualify either. But these random forced diversity films that are being put out now are going to be the ones that qualify for the Oscar nomination. So it's honestly not even worth watching at this point, if they choose to move forward with this.
Netflix's race swapped Cleopatra is going to win best documentary, right. I'm sure of it.
Like, that's what we're dealing with. Now, imagine you're trying to tell a historical story that just happens to center around white people, or God forbid, white men. Do you just not, you just make the story right and you put all this money in and you go, you know what? There's just no chance that we're nominated for an Oscar. There's no chance that we get to win that accolade anymore.
Yeah, I think it ultimately has to come down to the creators just letting go of their need or goal, which usually it's the goal of the art that creators are making. It's not to go and win something like an award like sure. this. It's just to create the art because they believe in it and it's something they want to bring to life. But it honestly has to be them just not caring about what the Hollywood community necessarily thinks at large and just going and making their films because they believe in it and they want to tell the story as it is or as they envision it. And that's, I mean, it's on the onus of every single creator to do that from here on.
But here's what sucks about it, right? Is that the Oscars is supposed to function as an avenue for meritocracy, right? That no matter what, if you are, you know, a talented individual who has put your heart and soul into a piece of art and you've done so in a way that resonates with the audience and that they love it, you could qualify and they will look at your film and judge it based on its merits. Now what they're going to be doing is like watching stories and writing down, okay, like one black actress, two Asians, four women. How are they going to even keep up with the storyline that you've put in your film at that point when they're just looking on your, based on your diversity points and trying to calculate whether or not you meet their 30% average? It's just insanity. They're literally stripping meritocracy out of an art form. Wild.
It's like, it's ESG for movies, basically. And we see this everywhere with affirmative action in hiring practices and at universities for college admissions. It's creating these standards based on this utopian, you know, self-righteous moral sense that everything needs to be equitable as I define it. And reality and all of its nuance is just so immoral and so wrong, and I'm judging reality for being real, and things need to be the way that my self-righteous moral vision says it should be. And even before they instituted these standards officially, this energy was already there in Hollywood because the Academy has been woke for some time. Casting directors have been woke. We know directors and actors, they're always, you know, puppeting the latest woke cause of the day. So this is not necessarily anything new, but they are saying the quiet part out loud now with these standards and just saying, yep, you will not be considered unless you have, you know, XYZ representation in your film. And like you said, Amla, that just takes directly away from judging a film on its merits, just like we're taking away from judging athletes or students or employees on the merits of whether they qualify for the job because of this woke worldview that just seems to be everywhere and infecting everything. And it all comes from this desire to impose this utopian self-righteous sense of how things ought to be onto reality when reality is just not that way. If you just tell stories that are good stories and do so beautifully and tell the human experience and all of its intricacies, or tell history and all of its messiness or whatever it may be, that's going to resonate with people. And that is art. That is beauty. That is reality. But the constant effort to engineer reality, it's what it is, like social engineering, just betrays an ideological possession that you just, you're captured by this woke ideology, and that's all you have to offer the world is this desire to impose your religion onto reality.
And you know who should be the most pissed about it? The people who are in these categories, the people who qualify as women, racial or ethnic group, LGBTQ+, or people with cognitive and physical disabilities, because what they are essentially saying is you are not good enough to get into films based on your own merit. You are not good enough to be in films based on your own acting. So therefore, we at the Academy must mandate that they cast you for these roles so that we are able to give you some sort of award or validate your skills as an actor or actress. It's truly disgusting, and what a slap in the face to anybody who is in part of those categories. And it takes away what could be beautiful moments of progress when you watch these award shows. If you think about Everything Everywhere All at Once, all the different awards that that won, being, you know, an Asian-led film, I believe Asian-directed and mainly Asian-casted. And, you know, Ke Huy Quan, he wins his Oscar, right? And people are cheering for him, screaming for him. What an amazing moment it is for an Asian man who could not get cast in films for near decades because they just simply weren't looking at him for roles, or he didn't want to meet the stereotype that they were trying to cast him for. And then he wins an Oscar. That is a beautiful thing for natural human progress if you are not in tandem forcing diversity. Right. When you are actively forcing diversity at the same time, people are going to look at that major win from him and go, oh, well, yeah, he just got it because he's Asian, which is what's going to happen from now on if the Oscars continues with these rules and mandates. I think of Hattie McDaniel, right? Okay. If you guys have seen Gone with the Wind, if you haven't, it's a beautiful 4-hour film that you should check out at some point. Hattie McDaniel played Mammy in that movie and was the first Black woman to win an Oscar. And here she is pictured winning that Oscar. Is this beautiful if you mandate that Black people win Oscars? No. Does it mean she's talented if you mandate that she's the one who has to win the award? No, it takes away all the power from it. It takes away all of the momentum from this person. I remember walking the Hollywood Walk when my family's here to visit and seeing her star and going like, wow, what an amazing achievement for this woman that she has a Hollywood star on the Walk of Fame, given the time that she was in and the nature of the film industry when she was an actress and powering through that and doing so gracefully and so beautifully that you win an award. Now, nobody's going to get moments like that because they quite literally are telling you that's what you have to give them. It just sucks.
Yeah, her talent shone through in that right. that moment. Like in the most difficult of times, she was she obviously put all her heart and soul into that character and into that performance, and it won out. And it's like that was the ray of hope that I'm, and you mentioned the Asian actor, I'm blanking on his name
Ke
right
Huy
now.
Quan.
Yes, yeah. And like those are the rays of hope that I believe will come through because if you're a true artist, at some point you will have to reconcile these mandates versus the true art. And I think the true art and the love for that creation will win out in the end, but it will take some time because this is pretty damning.
Right. And I get why the need is felt there, right? Like in multiple conversations, the through line that I'm finding is like, okay, Juneteenth. Yes, America committed this act of slavery. Horrible, disgusting. There was an emancipation. It definitely should be talked about. It definitely should be addressed. But when you force it on people and say, you need to do something for Black people on this day, guess what? It loses all of its power. And then when people do that naturally and they're naturally inviting and integrating and wanting to be in these larger melting pot communities with one another, it means nothing because you forced it. The same thing is happening with movies. And there's something to address there. Like if you watched West Side Story when it was put out, or if you even go back to watch it now, there are Hispanic characters played by white people. And they simply just made their skin a little bit darker and threw them out there on the stage and said, do an accent, right? If you watch a movie like 16 Candles, right? There is a Japanese man who's just played by a white guy, and they did this crazy caricature, threw him on the screen and said, do an accent, right? There are things to point out and go, you know what? In the time that we're in right now, with the progress that we've made, with how integrated we are as a society, maybe we cast an Asian actor. Maybe we cast Hispanic actresses and actors for our remake of West Side Story, which has happened, by the way, and is been done now by Steven Spielberg. So there are these moments to create and actually show real progress, but you just ruined the entire thing by virtue signaling. It's crazy. Oh, gosh. I don't know why this irks me so bad, because I don't really even watch the Oscars anyway, but I love movies. I love going to the movie theater. I'll go to the movie theater by myself and just like watch something random when I have a day that I have nothing to do. And to think that it's just going to be garbo for the next few years until people wake up and go, hey, this is not okay.
Do you think that's going to happen? Do you think there will be a wake up, or do you think we're doomed to continue to have this for the foreseeable future?
I like to think that like people who consider themselves real artists will never be subservient to rules like this, and will continue to make great things. And when you make something great, people find it. Like there's no way that greatness doesn't shine through the clouded ideas of people who are trying to mandate stuff like this. So I have a feeling people are going to create films. Is it going to be films that start showing in theaters? Is it going to be films that make it to the Oscars? Maybe not. Maybe we're going to see a rise in just independent film creation, and people are going to start listening to that more and watching out for that more. Maybe Sundance becomes, you know, the new Oscars, even though they're super woke now too. Maybe there's another way that people start to gauge what's good and what's bad.
Yeah, and I mean, most of the festivals out there are warped already, far beyond the Oscars themselves. So they're ahead of the curve. But I think, you know, you even look back at, you were talking about these older movies. You look back at the, call it late 2000s, and you had Slumdog Millionaire, a movie that kind of took over the world with how beautiful of a story it was. And it was like, yes, it happened to be in India in a very poor part, and it showed a story that a lot of people had never thought of, or it was brand new, it was original, it was gorgeous. And I think those are the kind of movies that are far more interesting than to tell and to get out there into the world than necessarily just, you know, cramming down all of these benchmarks to hit in order to get something that nominated. Like I just, it blows my mind that those quote unquote artists, one, are okay with this, and two, like, are playing along with it at the same time. Granted, I understand in order for them to get money from studios and everything, they have to play along with that and have to play the game. They have to play ball to a certain extent. But at a certain point, there will be a breaking point. And I think those artists who are exceptionally open on the characteristic spectrum, I don't think that these rules will be able to contain that openness or that desire to create something beautiful.
Yeah.
It will take time. It will take time.
We hope not. Yeah. I think, like you guys are saying, like, you can't hold down individual talent, like in the case of Hattie McDaniel. But I also think, like, if you are a director, or, you know, a writer, or like a filmmaker who's concerned about the underrepresentation of a particular group in a story, like, the creative challenge and where your creative genius comes in is, how do I make this story relevant to the world, and how do I make this demographic or whatever I'm trying to highlight? Like, okay, you still need a compelling story. So the way to get those people or that group that you're trying to represent, way to get them on screen is to make something actually good and worth watching that happens to have those people, or that is, you know, built around a compelling story that's there, not just from the top down forcing these people to be represented in any story that is told, because then you end up with all of these crappy movies that have all this forced diversity in it that doesn't resonate with anybody. So it seems like, you know, trying to put lipstick on the pig of bad storytelling, or just, you know, ideologically motivated filmmaking that just has the right faces on it, or the right colors represented, or gender identities or sexualities, but no actual, you know, real human element storytelling, making it relatable to people, no sincere creativity, no depth. People can sniff that out, and I don't think it's going to be something that pays off for them long term. I will say, however, I did see like a tweet this week from James Lindsay talking about how in wokeism, it's almost an art to like marry the truth to lies. And in that sense, I think that Hollywood does know how to make a good movie, and they know how to market their ideology. They know how to make it palpable. And so sometimes you watch movies and you're like, this was good, but I felt like the underlying message was really like trying to preach at me, and there was some weird stuff in there. And I think they're very good at that. But I still don't think long-term they'll be successful in pushing their ideology, just because it's not real and people don't like it.
Yeah, I feel like it's just not sustainable. By the way, I misspoke. Not 16 Candles. That was not the one with the Asian appropriation. I believe there's a movie where Marlon Brando plays a Japanese character of some sort, and they just like did prosthetics on his face to make him look Japanese. And like, if you have a qualm with that, that would make way more sense than like anything that's happening now with TV shows and movies.
Yeah, or like Ben Kingsley playing Mahatma Gandhi. Like, that was a big one too.
See, you know, and then I'm like, okay, I'll hear you out, right? Yeah. Because if you're an Asian person or a Black person or an Hispanic person, and you're quite literally going for roles of your race and not losing out to white people, okay, you know, I'll hear you out for that. But that's way different than mandating that people make 30%. And it's not even that. I think for the Oscars, you have to meet 2 out of the 4 rules. So, I mean, good luck. Have fun with that. Wow. Just amazing. We're going to move on here quickly to this Joe Rogan drama that's happening right now. Joe Rogan had RFK Jr. on his show, and they got into, in throughout their lengthy conversation, the conversation about vaccines. And RFK was talking about vaccine efficacy. I will show you a quick clip here where he discusses it.
22,000 people got the vaccine, 22,000 didn't, and they have 6 months of data. Some of that is unblinded, but it's 6 months. And during that 6 month period, in the vaccine group, one person died of COVID. And in the placebo group, 2 people died from COVID. So that allows Pfizer to tell the public and, you know, FDA to tell the public, oh, this vaccine is 100% effective. 22,000 people.
Okay. So essentially, if what he's saying is true, he's saying they tested 2 groups in a blind experiment about the vaccine, gave half of them placebo and half of them the real vaccine. In the vaccine group, 1 person gets offed. In the placebo group, 2 people. So if you look at those numbers, you'll go, oh, well, 1 versus 2, that means the vaccine is 100% effective. So then they can push as Big Pharma and say the vaccine is 100% effective in combating this virus. Now, if that is true, that would be a concerning data point, wouldn't it? Now, another physician and I believe vaccine specialist was not happy with what he heard on Joe Rogan's podcast and came out and called out Joe. He's been on Joe Rogan's show before. His name is Peter Hotez. I hope I pronounced that correctly. And he's basically coming out and saying, well, why would you have an anti-vaxxer like RFK Jr. on the show? Why would you allow him to espouse these beliefs and to push another narrative of misinformation on people who are likely to be moved if they hear the right information about vaccinations? So Joe goes back to him and says, well, come on the show. We'll have you on. You can debate with our RFK Jr. And, you know, we'll sit and let you debate. He even went as far as to offer him $100,000 that he could give towards a charity of his choosing if he simply would come on the show and debate. To which the doctor responded, Joe, you have my number, you have my email, you can call me, you can text me or whatever. I'm not going to come on your show, but you can reach me if you want to have a discussion on these things. So they've been going back and forth all day about this guy coming on the show and debating RFK Jr. He even went to MSNBC rather than going on Joe Rogan's show. Let's hear the clip.
Real quick, before we play that, we got a $50 super chat from Nick Tyler. So just want to read that immediately, as we do with $50 super chats. Says, is no one going to shout out the glitch-free intro? Thank you. Thank you for that, Nick. We finally got it.
We did. And
I'm going to go buy a lottery ticket. Had to work during the past 2 lives, so haven't had the chance to congratulate Scott on his Belmont win. Nice job, sir.
Let's go.
Good job, Scott.
Scott made the winning bet on a horse race that we all knew nothing about.
So. Yes. We love picking random horses that have cool names. All right. Let's watch MSNBC clip. Yeah. Thanks, Nick. We appreciate it.
Contrary to what RFK Jr. and other anti-vax nuts have claimed, there is no connection between vaccines and autism, no connection, no established documented connection between vaccines and serious diseases or mass death. Vaccines tend to save lives across the board, do they not? That's what the peer-reviewed evidence overwhelmingly shows, does it?
Didn't you talk about how easy it is to get peer-reviewed evidence published? Isn't that what James Lindsay and Boghossian did?
Yeah.
So that you can just write up a bunch of stuff now and just say, you put it through the system and they'll peer review it. And
yeah, they wrote several fake studies about weird stuff, like, I don't remember, homosexual behavior in dogs at dog parks or some weird thing like that, and got it published in some of these journals, you know, peer reviewed journals, just to demonstrate that they knew if they could say the right things and appeal to the right woke sensibilities, that their papers would get through. So just saying that that there's peer-reviewed evidence nowadays. There's ideological capture in the scientific community, and that's not sufficient to, you know, stake your entire claim on.
Exactly. Yeah.
And there have been some pretty prominent scientists out there, or people within that arena, within the scientific arena. And so the Weinstein brothers have been very vocal about the deterioration of what the peer review process has become. So they've been harping at this. And then James Lindsay and Peter Boghossian, and I believe there was another lady attached to that project as well that went about doing that, just to show the cracks and kinks and just broken system that it is. It's terrible because, like, in the world of science, we've talked about this many times. Mm-hmm. It's about the process of everything is theorized and everything is a theory. And in order to find something new, you have to challenge those theories and push forward. But it seems like this peer review process has been just an absolute stick in the spokes of the progress of science in general. And this is just unfortunately a wide open and bold face example of it.
They don't want the challenges, which is just so wild. As a doctor who is saying that he's worked, you know, so extensively on vaccines, why would you not sit down with somebody who you think is stupid and wrong to debate them and give the audience that likely agrees with him your perspective and maybe change their minds? Why would you not want to do that? It just doesn't make any sense to me.
It not. And people are dying right now from COVID still, because the evidence on COVID vaccines' efficacy is being ignored or shouted down on social media.
Well, there's three or four moving parts to this. So I'm a vaccine scientist. I make low cost, patent free vaccines for low and middle income countries. We made 100 million doses of. We made two vaccine prototypes that led to 100 million doses being administered in India and Indonesia. No patents, minimal strings attached. So we actually found a way to bypass the pharma companies, and yet RFK Jr. incessantly calls me a pharma shill. When, if anything, our vaccines maybe kept Pfizer and Moderna out of markets in India and in Indonesia. So I don't know.
I think he's maybe pointing out that you might have a vested interest in convincing people to be vaccinated. And that's not to invalidate or validate either side of the argument. It's simply to point out that if what you're prescribing and saying needs to be done involves maybe you earning a little bit of money on it, that might be an area of concern for people. That's just crazy. Crazy.
Understand that piece. And then the reason I got involved with RFK Jr. in the first place is I have an adult daughter, Rachel, who has autism and intellectual disabilities, and wrote the book Vaccines Did Not Cause Rachel's Autism, that refuted all of his false claims. And that's been, you know, he's been kind of after me ever since then. And now he's at it again. But this time, you know, Ilan, this time, Eddie, it's caused something really terrible, and that is during our COVID pandemic. I have a new book coming out that basically says 200,000 Americans needlessly perished because they believe the anti-vaccine disinformation and refuse to take a COVID vaccine during our Delta wave and BA1 Omicron wave in 2021-22 after vaccines were widely available. So the point is, anti-vaccine disinformation, it's always done a lot of damage and harm, but now it's a lethal force in the United States. And that's why we have to have that discussion. And I offered to come and talk to go on Joe Rogan again. I've been on a couple of times and have that discussion with.
But he won't take the $100,000 offer to be on there and sit across from RFK Jr. Sus.
But not to turn it into the Jerry Springer show with having RFK Jr. on.
Right.
Well, so it's sad because I said I'm so fed up with the debate me, because it's not really about the debate. If it was about finding out information, as you said, you've already written about vaccines and autism. You've already spoken and written about COVID.
Oh, you wrote about it, so don't ever defend it on a public forum. You know, you wrote about it. Go have them buy the book, right? Go do your book plug on MSNBC, right? Because that's where they can hear your argument, which is completely written in your own wording and lacks anybody talking back or giving any sort of dissident opinion. Just read the book, guys.
Vaccines. I think you've been on MSNBC and other channels hundreds of times since the start of the pandemic. People can hear your views and the evidence you bring to this. So they're not actually interested in evidence. And it saddens me that you're a man who basically has saved lives abroad with the vaccines you've developed, whereas RFK has contributed to a culture, a vaccine misinformation culture, that has led to the deaths, as you say, of hundreds of thousands of lives, and yet he's the one being celebrated by tech billionaires.
The old grandma killer insult. We know how well that worked during the pandemic. We know how effective that argument is.
Like Musk and Jack Dorsey, while you're being smeared and defamed. And I would say, I don't know if you've agreed to debate or not. My advice is not to, and people might find that surprising because I wrote a book about debate. But I just think there's a time and a place for a debate. I don't think a historian of World War II.
We have two books, guys.
Did anyone on this segment write a book? I don't know.
Oh my gosh. Can we go buy it? Is there a place where we can buy Win Every Argument, The Art of Debating, Persuading, and Public Speaking by Mehdi Hasan that he doesn't actively use in his real life because he refuses to debate and also encourages other people not to debate for $13.47 hardcover on Amazon? All he wanted was the book plug, so I figured I'd do it for him on the show.
First chapter is don't do it.
Right, literally. It's just a blank book. There's nothing in it.
A Holocaust denier. I mean, just look, that's my analogy here. Like, I don't think these debates between experts and cranks do anything other than elevate the cranks.
Crazy. If you didn't hear that last part, he just made the connection, his own personal connection, that if you are somebody who is anti-vax or vaccine hesitant, that you are analogous to somebody who denies the Holocaust and therefore should not be actively debating people who are skeptical of your opinion. Insanity. But yeah, don't go and debate on Joe Rogan's show. Don't go debate RFK Jr. It's not because you're wrong, right? It's because they don't deserve the time of day. Even though millions of Americans and, you know, people all over the world agree with them, share their perspective, and more importantly, share their skepticism of this current scientific community, they're cranks, right? They're nuts. They're wild. Somehow millions of people who all share this opinion are just crazy.
His whole energy is literally what creates vaccine skepticism. When you have this airtight narrative that only ever gets spoken out from every possible platform and is never allowed to be challenged, and you're, you know, a crank or a misinformation spreader or, you know, whatever, an anti-vaxxer if you ever question any of it, this is the reason why people have to go to alternative places, because you won't allow your ideas to be challenged on your forum. This whole energy here has just been like nonstop mockery, casting aspersions, speaking very confidently, but and very quickly, and making all these points. But it's all just a bunch of mental gymnastics to avoid having your ideas confronted in a direct way and having to see which one is going to win, you know, and the claims that have been made on his platform, will they be refuted by somebody? Because Joe Rogan is not the expert in that situation, but Joe's like, hey, I had this guy on and he said a lot of things and some of them made sense to me. I pushed back a little bit. I had this guy on. Some of his made sense to me and some of them didn't. This is one of the largest platforms in the world. Why don't you guys come together and let's hash this whole thing out and let people decide for themselves? That's how it works in a functioning free speech society. But that's not what this guy wants. Mehdi Hasan wants. He wants a institutional narrative that he can hand down and him and all of his media buddies can just impose on the world and never have to be questioned.
Right. We got another $50 super chat from Nick Tyler. Got to read that immediately before we get back into this. Says, shocking reality. Over 90% are never cited by other researchers. When I say over 80%, I mean it's almost 100%. That is a scary truth about higher education in the U.S. I think we're talking about peer-reviewed studies there.
I believe so.
I believe. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to find that a lot of them are never cited by other researchers or used, and then we're just living in this world that peer-reviewed studies just keep getting pushed out and pushed out and pushed out and pushed out and used for different arguments that are being made. To Taylor's point about him not wanting to have this discussion and push his own agenda, if that's what he's like in bigger instances, like debating RFK and talking about COVID vaccines, I wonder what he's like as a doctor at his practice. How are you dealing with patients who presumably every single day come into your practice with questions about whatever given treatment you want to give them, and maybe skepticism in tandem with the questions that they have in regard to your care? As a medical provider, or really any sort of service provider in this country, you are meant to try to let people's skepticism, you know, subside. You're meant to actively be in, not necessarily a debate, but a form of back and forth with everyday patients in order to lead them down the right path. Now, if you're refusing to do it on an issue so important as COVID, I mean, like, what are you doing when regular everyday patients share the same exact beliefs that RFK and Joe Rogan have? Nothing?
Yeah, I don't know. And yeah, this is so crazy because we've talked again multiple times about this situation of having the open free market of ideas. And in order for like the best and the truth to come out within that marketplace, these conversations have to be had.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to be had at the same level, at the same chair, at this in the same conference, you know, whatever it may be in the setting. But these people have to be talking to one another, not across from one another, not over one another, nothing like that. This truth will out within that conversation. And, you know, if you believe wholeheartedly in your stance and your ideas and your beliefs and whatever science you decide to cling yourself to, you know, take that step forward and put your money where your mouth is, or at least put your belief where your mouth is, you know, and have that discussion and tell them where they're wrong or what they're missing and show them where there are holes in their argument or something along those lines. But to just full on say like, no, this is complete hogwash and they're conspiracy theorists and all that kind of stuff, That just builds the animosity that Taylor was speaking to, you know, between the two. And it doesn't help your side win over anyone. So I just don't understand this approach.
I agree. We're going to talk about that in just a second as well. We have another $50 super chat that we must read immediately. Let's pull it up from John Barry. He says, raise my kids as my parents raised me. No color, no race seen. Judge people on their actions. The daughter is a junior at ECU and the son is early accepted into Tennessee and has no woke agenda yet. Also, down with the 1979... because Wu-Tang is forever. John Barry, we appreciate that. I also appreciate the way that you're raising your kids, because that's the way it should be done. No color, no race. Judge people based on their actions. That's the way to be. Yeah, what you were saying, Scott, reminds me of Sabrina, who works here at PragerU. She had her first child and was like, you know what? I don't know what to do about vaccinations. I'm going to go to the doctor and I'm going to bring a whole list of questions that I have. I'm going to read a bunch of books about vaccines. And she would go to doctors and try to find pediatricians for her child. And they would be like, how dare you ask me questions about this? And like, you should, this is not of your concern. I'm the doctor. I'll tell you what your child needs. I would be out the door immediately. No way in hell would you be seeing my child if you spoke to me like that over basic questions. And I can't help but think that's what a doctor like this would do. Peter Hotez. I can't help but think that's what you would do if this is the way you're talking about, you know, people who are presumably at least somewhat studied on the subject of what they're speaking of COVID and COVID vaccines. Anyways, on that note.
Yeah, well, just one last thought is that, like, you know, the goal should not necessarily be to censor misinformation, because if you censor information that's out there, you're creating a situation in which you're determining what information is and isn't available. And that inherently creates a lack of trust. You're setting yourself up as the arbiter of what information the public deserves to have and what they don't. And the refusal for the experts, because that's what it is, right? We're refusing to engage with these, you know, these cranks because we're the experts and they're beneath us. But by refusing to do so and by refusing to answer honest questions, you're creating a situation in which the public trusts you even less, because now you're saying, here's the information you're allowed to have, and also you're not allowed to question it. And so the public says, I'm not allowed to have, you know, this type of information, I'm not allowed to question it. Okay, well, what am I supposed to do with that? Like, of course, you're not going to trust whatever authorities, whatever media is handing you down, even if you're right. But if you are right, then you have nothing to hide. So just go and have the conversation. It's that simple. But that's why when you have a one-sided information highway in a society and you have censorship and you have experts who are not willing to be questioned, you have a problem and you will not have public trust.
Absolutely, because there's no reason to. There's literally no reason. If anything, all of this drama right now is just reinforcing what is being said on Joe Rogan's podcast. You're doing the exact opposite. You're going to push more people to the camp of being anti-vax or at least vaccine hesitant. That's effectively what you're doing right now.
Yeah.
Let's get into Super Chats.
All righty.
And while we're getting into them, guys, please like the chat. I noticed there's over 2,000 of you here, but we have 800 likes on the podcast. Let's get it to 1,000 if we can. See if we can do it by the end of our Super Chats.
All righty. Yes, please give us a like. Lorna's Little Loves says, love from Lorna in Scotland. Thank you, Lorna.
Oh, thank you.
Imagination Junkie says, couldn't listen live on Friday. Here are three things I wanted to say while listening later. And then gives multiple super chats for each one. So let's read them. One, happy birthday, Amala. Hope this is thank the best you. Year yet. If you guys miss her, it's Amala's birthday on Friday. Kind of had a party
it.
Stream. Go watch that if you
yeah.
want. We gave her a get well soon balloon because the DoorDash guy messed
have
up our order.
Well?
And Imagination Junkie also says, two, a con is a fan convention. San Diego Comic-Con is the most well-known. Dragon Con is the best MO. I personally would never take a toddler to a con.
Somebody guessed that. Did you guess Comic-Con on Friday's show?
I said conference. I don't remember.
Somebody guessed it. Somebody did. Okay, so it's good to know. That's Comic-Con.
But I did see a lot of comments, people mad at us for not knowing that. But like, I'm kind of disappointed in us because
so
we weren't in tune with the con culture.
Yeah,
so I'm sorry. And last one from Imagination Junkie says, three, I'm probably one of your oldest listeners at 52. Love the show and love the fact that you're gently distributing red pills to young people. I wish your show had existed when I was your age.
Oh, amazing. Thank you so much for watching. We greatly appreciate it. We have quite a large age range on the show. On Friday, you guys put your ages in the chat and it was like 13, 27, 45, 65. There's ages all over the place. So that's always fascinating.
It is. And I like the phrasing of gently distributing red pills. You know,
we
that's,
do try.
Again, it underscores what we were just talking about. Like the gentleness, the willingness to, hey, give the information to people in a way that is compassionate instead of just saying, here is the right way. You're not allowed to question it, which we've been talking
about
today.
So, offer it to you. We leave it by your bedside and you can take it if you want.
Yeah, a sports analogy would be like instead of just dunking on it, we do a cute little finger roll.
And you might not be the oldest. LaDonna Martinez says she is 74.
Wow.
LaDonna, thank you so much for watching the show.
That's awesome.
We'll see if anybody older goes in the chat down below. We'll see who our winner is. So far, it's LaDonna Martinez.
All right. Let's see if we can beat her, but that's awesome. Alex says, hey there, guys. Happy 23rd birthday, Amala.
Thank you.
Sorry I missed Friday's episode. Can I get an Ayo Shoddy from Amala? I listened to Friday's episode today.
Ayo Shoddy.
Is that like a thing or was that just like a random request?
I don't know. Okay. I don't know.
Well,
Madzilla Rar says 83, but your name is Madzilla Rar, so I don't know if I believe that you are 83. If you are 83 and RAR is in your username, what are you doing on the internet? Where did you find this? I'm curious. You let me know. Patricia McCoy says she's 75. Look at that. Look at that.
I'm home. Black Bouquet says, my boyfriend, half black, didn't get the day off work, but the company he was doing a job for did. He works in geotechnical construction, so he works outside.
See, that's the thing. I think, what is it, federal holidays, it's like, you know, the post office, all government, you know, agencies and entities, those are off.
Yeah.
And are schools? Sometimes? I don't know.
I don't know about schools.
Are kids getting days off for Juneteenth?
But I do know.
You lucky ducks.
Is the market open today? I haven't checked.
I think it's closed. I think I got a notification.
Usually the markets
closed.
Follow that as well.
What I know is my insurance isn't open.
Were you like doing a lot of domestic things today, like doctor appointments, insurance things?
I was literally just trying to call my insurance to go to a dermatologist. That's literally it. I was like, you know what? I want to get a facial. How do I go to a dermatologist? And they wouldn't answer. So it's cool. Thank you. I'm so happy we're celebrating Juneteenth today. Thank you so much.
That's systemic racism if I've ever seen it alive and well. Let's see. Alex again says, what do you guys want to bet that the left is going to push wokeness so far that they will start saying no more whiteness in this, that, and the next thing?
They kind of already are, aren't they?
Yeah.
Isn't that what they're doing with the Oscars? You start with 30%, then it's 50, then it's 75, and then you're done for.
In so many words.
You're out of here, whiteies.
Diversity literally means less white people.
Yeah,
so.
That's literally all it means. Tragic.
Frank Mayen says, Amala, if you don't marry me right now, I'm going to get mad. Lol, just kidding. I love your show. Keep up the good work.
Glad you're just kidding. I will keep up the good work because I can't marry anybody right now. So sorry. Taken.
Bioid Muse says, this is the start. They want control, not freedom of creativity, not freedom of speech. They just want to control us.
Yep. You know, it's just so sad. I don't know what movies are going to be like. And then it's just, I just have a feeling it's not going to land. Like, it's just not going to land. People are going to continue to make good movies, I hope. Every now and then. Every now and then a good movie comes out and I'm like, okay, the fire is still there.
Yeah.
McGup says, I was waiting for one, for some department store to have one of those holidays white sale for Juneteenth.
Have a white sale?
Yes.
I wonder what that would look like.
I was waiting for some old department store to have a white sale for Juneteenth. That's basically what he's saying.
Like selling white people?
That is a good question. I'm not sure.
I need to know the logistics of that.
I have heard of it. Didn't like, wasn't there like bake sales that was like different prices in schools, different prices for minorities and stuff?
I have heard of that. Yeah. Remember where that? It was like, what did it say? Like 25 cents for black people, 50 cents for Hispanics or something. And it was like a dollar for white people. And then it was like $1.50 for Asians. Oh. Something crazy. Something crazy.
What a world. Silver Dollar says, do you guys have any comments or info regarding increased military presence in dozens of U.S. cities? Training or drill for something we don't know?
I don't know anything about that. I've not heard anything. Have you heard anything about that?
I haven't, no.
No.
Oops. News to me.
That's news to me, brother.
I know National Guard has been called to multiple different areas over the past 2 years for certain issues, but I don't know certain if that's issues. Exactly what you're referring to.
No clue. We'll have to look into this.
I hope they're going down to the border cities, but I don't know about the rest.
Doubt. Highly doubt.
Doubt it. Doubt it. John Barry says, my first live show. Thank you so much, Amala and the boys, for delivering great content, being open-minded on a topic, and offering your views, which seem to mirror all Americans.
Thank you so much for watching. We appreciate it. If we ever start a band, it's going to be called Amala and the Boys.
And the Boys.
I'm into that.
that's great. Mirroring all America. We're just chilling, like you said. We chilling.
We just chilling. We just I wish we mirrored all of our, or most Americans. I don't know if that's true. I might be optimistic thinking there, John.
We're getting there. Alex again says, I just had to say this. Don't take your kids to see the Flash movie. There's like a 3 or 4 minute scene of the Flash's backside / nudity. In the Alex Jones voice, they're turning the kids gay.
They're turning the frog gay. I wasn't going to see the Flash movie anyways.
Yeah.
So that's okay. I don't
three
want
three or four minutes. What are you doing 3 or 4 minutes?
I know.
Male rear nudity.
I'm
that's
concerned, but not concerned I'm enough to find out.
Yes. Not. Will not be looking that one up. Ahmed Almagrahi says, I'm from Libya and we don't have any of this woke stuff here, but I'm so invested. It's interesting how too much of open-mindedness, it's interesting what too much open-mindedness leads you to. Love you, heart emoji.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, I know a lot of people watch from other countries where maybe it is worse than it is here, or it's nothing's going on like it is here, and they're just looking at America and going, oh my goodness, that is crazy. I've heard from a lot of people who are obviously foreigners to America and saying, you know, we're not even trying to move to America anymore because it's just seeming a little weird. I still think there's a lot to be had in this country, but it does. If you're watching the news, you're going to get a weird, twisted picture of what's going on.
Indeed. Or movies or anything else you see coming out of the country.
There's a lot of societal rot going on right now.
There's craziness, not going to lie.
Yeah, there is.
Tiana Johnson says, hi, I'm from South Africa and love to watch your lives. I used to want to come to USA, but watching news, I honestly don't.
What did I just say? What are the odds?
Literally called it.
That's so funny. You know, funny. Don't blame you. Don't blame you.
I think our European and African viewers are enjoying the new start time because I feel like we're seeing a few more. Yeah. Viewers from those places.
Let us know in the chat. Is this a better time of day for you? And what time is it where you are right now? Drop that in the chat down below.
We are going global, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, we are.
STFUFFS says, Ki Hu Kwan was typecast by his roles in The Goonies and Indiana Jones, Temple of Doom, and Juneteenth is a slap in the face of American blacks.
That's exactly right. Yeah, I've listened to his story after seeing all of the awards that he won and everything, and it seems like it checks out. I mean, if you were an Asian actor in that time, you probably would be typecast for virtually every single role that you played. It just wasn't the market wasn't really vast at that moment for Asian actors.
Yes, indeed. And Nicodemus, 1984, says, imposing rules upon artists contradicts the essence of art itself, as it is meant to defy limitations and embrace the freedom of creative expression. Great topic, as usual, by the way.
That was beautiful. You need to sew that on a pillow. I don't even know. That's like that is gorgeous, whatever you just
that
wrote there.
Deep.
That was good. Wow. True.
Brianna Pulicicchio. Sorry, that's Italian or something? That's hard to say. Hope y'all are well. Can't thank you guys enough for being such wonderful people. Oh, Pulicicchio.
Mm.
Okay. She spelled it out the pronunciation for me. Thank you. Hope that helps with saying
phonetics.
My last name. It did. I wish I would have passed the test immediately or just read it before reading it out loud. I would have looked less dumb, but you know, it's fine. One of them says, I think you're talking about Mickey Rooney in Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Maybe. Oh, there's also that one. Okay, hold on. Let me look. I will know as soon as I see the face. The Marlon Brando one wasn't. Let me see. Mickey Rooney in Breakfast at Tiffany's. That is exactly what I'm talking about. Thank you, guys. Not 16 Candles. Breakfast at Tiffany's. Legs, look at that. Come on now. BFFR. This is what they were doing for Asian characters in movies. You know, you might be onto something if you're not okay with that. You might have got a point right there. I'll allow it. So sorry. Sorry.
See, this
that.
Is why too y'all gotta watch to the end of the show, because we do some there's some live fact checks and stuff that happened in the super chats, and so we'll get a lot of angry comments of being like, it wasn't 16 candles. Right. Just sort of watch to the end. Automatic correction.
We always get there. We always get there.
You guys
there.
Keep us honest. Thank
Unlike
you.
The media.
Sam I Am says, thank you for all your dedication to proclaiming truth. Amala, I pray you continue to follow the truth and accept God's gift of salvation.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
The proselytizing super chats. We love it. Sup, my dude says, dating question. If I'm on a date and the woman constantly flatulates and blames the ghostly spirits of the bar, should I look for someone else?
Maybe. Depends on where you're at in life. You know, what's going on in your life? How are you meeting standards? If not, might be a perfect candidate.
So my dude, are you sure it's not just a speaker playing 1975 songs in her pocket?
You're fired, Taylor. Effective immediately.
If you guys don't know, So my dude usually insults the 1975 Amala's favorite band in his super chats. So I had to do it for him that time.
If you guys also don't know, Taylor will not be on the show come Wednesday.
yeah, this is Taylor's last day.
Time here is done.
Karen Cueva says, first super chat ever. Happy late birthday and Father's Day to the crew. Question, have y'all seen Plandemic or Zeitgeist movies?
I have not. Mm-hmm. Actually, I've seen the Zeitgeist, the first documentary. I believe there's multiple of those, but I watched it a really long time ago. I can't even recall all the different things that were featured in that, but I have not seen Plandemic, no.
Yeah, neither have I.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't seen either one. Sorry. Just another bookworm says, hi y'all, first time catching alive. Love your content. As a white girl in a biracial family, I find this diversity push quite annoying. On another note, happy belated birthday. Lots of love from NC,
Thank
North Carolina.
Thank you. Yeah, we all hate the push for diversity. I can't tell you how many like people of color walk up to me and say like, this diversity stuff is crap. Like, we don't like watching it. And it's not like everybody's like, oh, it's just white people who hate it. It's not true. It's not true. There's so many people of color who hate what's going on right now. So many.
Mm-hmm. Just like there's a lot of gay people who hate the pride demonstrations every year in June. So,
yep.
Imagination Junkie again says, on today's topic, when the Academy released these rules, I wrote a furious post on my Oscar blog. I never publish another. How can I dream of winning an award if I can't be sure I won for my talent?
It's a great conundrum, isn't it? You can't be.
Yeah. One of the things, too, is I think you touched on it, Amala, but like how they don't even see how much like the mental health issue and crisis out there is in full bore right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, how much mental health issues and in the future are they creating right now with maybe messing with people's ideas of who they are and who, like, what their talents are and what they can do. And if they're throwing this in the mix of it all, like, are they even considering, hey, what are we doing to these people down the road?
How many dreams are you crushing, huh? At the Academy? How many? How many identities are you throwing down the toilet by making them identify by these stupid, superficial characteristics? Riddle me that.
And it is, you know, I sympathize too, because for somebody who, if you're passionate enough about film and movies and stuff to like have a blog about it, and, you know, people who go just invest their whole lives and career in this industry and it's just being completely poisoned by this ideology. It's, you know, as Donald Trump said, everything woke turns to shit.
Nail on the head.
Be true. Okay, 1800 Young Trash says, you're a Labor Day baby. Happy birthday. Are you a Labor Day baby?
I don't get what that
means. I think they're talking about conception.
Oh.
Oh, gosh.
I still don't know how that would make sense. But, sure.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks for the birthday wishes, at least. Patricia Weiss says, bruh, drank too much vodka lemon. It's too hot here. I have no idea what this is all about. Hey. You fit right in.
Sounds like you're having a good time. Yeah.
Nick Tyler says, my previous super chat was obviously not peer reviewed, given how I forgot to say peer reviewed papers, 90%, then 80%. I blame the 1975. Happy belated birthday, Amala. Hope you had a wonderful day full of friends and dancing.
Aw, thank you. I did indeed. Lots of dancing.
Patricia again says, I know I'm going to regret this, but have a nice day. You're doing a great job, all of you.
Why are you going to regret it?
I think she's referring back to drinking too much vodka lemon.
Oh, okay. Oh. Yeah, that's, yeah. You probably will. That's actually accurate. Peer-reviewed studies say so.
Just mix in a few waters here and there, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The Outlaw Feminist says, they need to drop sex workers under the LGBTQ. Sex workers, and then in parentheses, strippers are now sex workers, meet all criteria of that umbrella, marginalized in constant danger of sickness and death and suicide.
I think they need to get rid of all of the acronym altogether. So I can say that I support that, but I do see the point that you are making. I think no acronym is the future, hopefully. It's the better future.
There's already too many letters for me to remember.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I can't add an SW to the end there.
And then that, like, is it 2SSW
now? It's 2SLGBTQIASW plus if we add sex workers. I'm so sorry. I just can't support that.
That reminds me of the kids who memorize like pi beyond 3.14.
I think,
like,
I know pi. I know quite a bit of pi. Do you know? Ooh, does anybody else know? Okay, wait. I think it's 3.14159265358979323646226.
You're asking me?
Yeah, you asked like a trash. You could have been making up numbers.
You guys can back check that. It went a little blurry towards the end. You guys let me know if the end of that was anywhere near accurate to what pi is, but I think it is.
Why did you memorize that?
I don't know. When I was like 11 or 12, I like had a printer at home and I printed out pi on a white piece of paper and just started reading over it for, like, you know, way more time than I should have at that age.
Wow. That's impressive. Funny.
Very dirty and dumb.
Interesting. Okay. I mean, I just spent like 2 hours the other day doing a map of Europe and filling in all the countries until I could do them all, because I realized I didn't know them and I just wanted to know them.
Yeah.
So I guess I could sympathize with having like weird quirks to want to memorize things.
Know things.
That was impressive.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Francis says, Morpheus, I'm trying to free your mind, Neo, but I can only show you the door. You're the one that has to walk through it.
Gently placing the red pill by the bedside, as we said before.
Have you even seen The Matrix, Amala?
I have.
Okay.
I didn't love it. I'm sorry, guys. Maybe I need to go watch it again, but I did not love it. I was not astounded, as many seem to be, by that film.
Well... Sorry, if you watched it in 1999, you would be.
Yeah, exactly.
Tula Helena says, what is the best way to fight against this ideology that forces transgenderism and pride in general onto kids, in your opinion? Happy late birthday.
Just tell the truth and don't buy their products. That's literally about it. Just do whatever you can in your normal everyday life to combat it being a part of your life. I'm really like just starting to believe it comes down to the individual. If you don't support something, just don't support it individually. And, you know, talk about it as much as you can. Have conversations surrounding it. And if it is a problem in your community, speak out against it. But for the most part, just safeguard yourself and your own mind.
Well said. Nick Tyler again says, I am 1,975 years old. I think that's a 1975
yes,
reference
clearly.
Yet again.
Love that for you. Love that for you.
Gina Leon again says nothing but sends a super chat. Thank you, Gina.
Thank you.
Jess the Mess says a new movie on Netflix worth the watch is Extraction 2. The first one was good also.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't
never
see
heard
those.
Of a...
It's a Chris Hemsworth.
It's like an action
one.
Movie.
Yeah.
Chris Hemsworth.
The first one was actually pretty wild because most of the shots, there were only a few of them, but they were all tracking similar to 1917, how it was like it seemed to go
it
and
seemed
flow
to be one
all
shot,
in one
yeah.
shot. Yeah, so the action sequences in that first one are pretty mind-blowing.
Good.
Yeah, and nice. I think it was the first movie directed by an actual former stunt choreographer. So he literally has the mind of what, you know, the stunt man
Very
would be
cool.
doing and everything. So
I haven't really watched a Chris Hemsworth movie that I can think of. Actually, no. He was in the remake of Red Dawn. I've seen that.
Oh.
That was it. No, so it was all right. It was all right, the Wolverines. I always loved the original Red Dawn, so I watched the new one, and I was like, you know, it wasn't horrible.
Mm. You know? I never saw either one.
It's good.
He was in Cabin in the Woods. Film. That was a good movie, if you wanted it. Like, way
Cabin
back
in
the early to late 2000s. Cabin in the Woods.
If you want
to
feel
Drop
super...
your favorite Chris Hemsworth movie in the chat.
Right. If you want to feel super patriotic, watch Red Dawn.
Yeah.
That'll get you revved up.
I'm going to watch it then. I love that stuff. 4th of July. It's my movie.
Heck yeah.
Helen Martinez says, I think you once said of having this podcast in Spanish, it'd be super helpful to have in Spanish so I can show it to my friends and learn truth.
Unfortunately, it's a very heavy lift to do an hour of content in Spanish. We do not know quite how to do that.
What we could do is have Taylor say everything he says in Spanish because he's our polyglot.
Right. Taylor is fluent.
YouTube needs to make the captions go in Spanish. That would come a long way.
Integrate with Google Translate or something.
Yes. But yeah, I don't know about the live translation. Then it would take twice as long. Or if it was not live and then just me dubbing over their whole show, no one wants to.
You'd have a long job, a long day at work.
Plus, I'm not like that good. But anyways, Christy Get Gray says, I'm the luckiest girl in the world. I live on a small farm in the heart of this great country with my husband of 48 years,
five dogs
and 3 goats. As a 66-year-old boomer, I don't understand this world today.
That, first of all, is dope. Yeah. I wish that's how I was living right now. That's amazing. 48 years, too. Congratulations to you and your husband. And yeah, I could see living like that, how you wouldn't understand what's going on right now. Oh, good for you. Good for you.
Yeah, thank you for watching. That is
awesome. That is awesome.
Alex again says, are we ever going to get Amala and the Boys cover song of Gasolina or maybe something by Romeo or maybe a bachata tutorial?
Probably
by the way,
not.
Sick burn, Taylor.
Probably not, guys. I can never promise that to you. I apologize.
Amala the Boys. Yeah, just white dudes doing Latin music with a half black girl. That makes sense.
That makes total sense.
Brianna, I'm not going to try to pronounce it again, but Brianna says, don't worry, Taylor, everyone, unless they're family, mess it up. I married into an Italian family and still have to spell it out in my head. Wow. That's love right there.
Perpetual struggle.
Like, that's a lot of syllables.
It is.
Almost like Epinobi.
Yep. Everybody messes up my name too, girl.
Trandall's sneakily difficult, that Trandall. H in there.
Yeah.
But anyways, McGup says white sales were stores trying to sell towels and linens. It's just seemed an interesting sale title for Juneteenth.
Gotcha. Now I get it. Sold.
Hmm. That would be very much against the grain of the day.
Yeah.
Interesting. One of them says, me again, just wanted to let you know Unwoke Inc. really inspired me to start my own business. I'm building my first electric guitar to sell right now.
Amazing. Oh, I love to hear so that. Cool. That's so great. That was the very purpose of that documentary, is to encourage people to start creating alternatives, supporting alternatives. So I'm so glad that inspired you. If you guys want to see it, it's on prageru.com. You can check it out.
And stay tuned this week, because we are going to release it, I think, on the YouTube channel as well.
Yup. So,
STFUFFS again says, as a white BIPOC, yes, we exist. I was shocked when I heard that Al Sharpton suggests drinking Kool-Aid was part of celebrating Juneteenth on MSNBC today.
All the stereotypes. You know what?
I'm not shocked he said that, honestly.
No. Sounds like Al Sharpton.
Literally or figuratively, the Kool-Aid? Could go both ways.
Probably literally.
Literally, yeah. He just didn't know figuratively. It could be interpreted that way.
Did he say red drink or
purple?
Purple drink.
And then what is a white BIPOC? What would you have to be? Black indigenous person of color.
You could be white passing. You could be...
Is that like a Scandinavian in Scandinavia?
I don't know.
Indigenous?
We'll have to get to the details on that. I'm not sure.
Okay. Fiod Muse again says, why would I see The Flash after what he did? They had no problem dropping Johnny Depp just for allegations. Why? Because he's a white man and Ezra Miller is non-binary actor. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to watch it. And that is a valid reason not to watch it, because why would you want to support something like that after what they did to Johnny Depp? And the videos of Ezra Miller are just crazy. Just look up the videos of him like getting arrested or him assaulting people. It's just wild. And he's like, I'm non-binary. My pronouns are they, them, theirs. Don't call me he, him, blah, blah, blah. Ugh. Insufferable.
And to make an even closer association or comparison, there is just look at what they've essentially done with the Superman actor and DC pushing him out for much less than what Ezra has done.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Takes very little.
Indeed. Baby Jack Jack says, if you're going to make a movie/TV about a certain culture, it makes sense to want your team to be from that culture and to have participated in that culture. But I believe that should be up to the studio.
Yeah, totally. Or like you could hire a consultant. They do that for a lot of different movies and stuff like that. So yeah, it's up to you. I don't think it should be like a hard and fast rule, as you said, but it's up to them at the end of the day what they want to do.
Patricia's back says, why is Amala reciting numbers? What is going on here? Vodka lemon, why did I do this?
Pie, baby.
Hang in there.
She's drunk here.
lay down. Dharma Initiative says, Medicare and SSDI will be overtaxed by collateral damage caused by LGBTQIA movement. Economy will suffer, will force more socialized programs.
I got to be honest, I know nothing about all that.
Sounds legit, though. Radically Free just gives a super chat, no message, thank you. Jess the Mess says, yes, the OG Red Dawn will turn you into a prepper and watch for helicopters.
For real. When they're like all struggling and everybody's invading, oh my gosh, I won't give any more away, but yeah, that movie goes hard.
Pedro says, love the show, shout out from your local delivery driver. I'm still mind blown on the moment we had yesterday.
Yeah, I did. I met so many of you guys that watched the show yesterday, so it was very nice to meet you. It's happening more and more often, which is just mind blowing to me.
The Inner Light says, Jordan Peterson had James Lindsay on recently, highly recommend, would love to hear your take on James Lindsay. I've been binging his new Discourses channel for a month now. Best wishes to you guys and your audience.
Taylor, take it away.
No, I recommended him the other day. I like James Lindsay a lot. I mean, he's a little bit shoots off the hip on Twitter. If your only impression of him is his Twitter, then you're probably not seeing how rich and intellect he is. But if you listen to his podcast, the dude can unpack some deep intellectual stuff. And he really digs down into woke ideology and everything behind it. And I usually listen to like one every few weeks and like have to pause every few minutes and just digest what's being said because it's so intense. But yeah, I do recommend. And I haven't watched him on Jordan Peterson yet, but I really want to.
And Taylor has interviewed him. You can check that out at preview.com.
Mm-hmm.
It's a video
mm-hmm.
that exists.
Gina Leon says, me again. I meant to wish you happy belated birthday. Thank you for all you do.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate it.
And Radically Free says, have you watched The Chosen, Taylor? What did you think of it? I was recently saved and appreciate if you specifically Appreciate you specifically for making me think of God. Blessings.
Wow,
that's awesome to hear that that you're going through that now. But I have not seen The Chosen. I've heard about it. It's like a Scott. Do you know anything about it? I know it's like a popular Christian show, but I haven't really seen much. I've seen some people I follow on Twitter mad about certain theological things. I've seen other people really excited about it, but I haven't really checked it out yet. So
yeah,
I don't know.
I'm familiar with it, but I haven't watched it either. And I've heard the same things you have. You know, I'm always a little hesitant to dive into any of those productions or anything like that. I at least let them breathe out there in the open. I kind of want to gather the takes on, you know, at least from a Catholic perspective, what it is before I dive into it and sink time into it. But yeah, most of what I know about it is similar to
hearsay.
Yeah.
But anyway, we'll have to check it out. And yeah, congratulations on where you're at with your faith journey. And I'm honored to hear that I may have encouraged you in any way. So super cool to hear. Thank you. Gina again says, I'm going to go broke if I keep correcting my typos.
don't correct your typos.
We need to sign up here so she doesn't enter your bank account in our super chat. And I think we got one more here. Or a couple more. SDFU again says, white BIPOC, Mexican-born, white dad, 25% Native American, 6% Black, 2% Filipino, the rest white.
There we go. That does, in fact, qualify you as BIPOC.
You have the card.
You do.
We cannot take it away from you.
No, we can't.
Right-leaning RLL says, watch The Last Lives and found out we have the same birthday. Happy belated birthday.
Oh, amazing. Oh, cool. And happy belated birthday to you, too.
That's dope. My brother is born on June 16th as well. So
all the June 16ers. Beautiful.
And I think that's all the super chats we got today, guys. We made it.
Okay, guys, that concludes our show. It seems like you guys are liking our new time, which is 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. So make sure you're here for that on Wednesday and Friday. We have more videos coming out throughout the week, so make sure to stick around for that. Please like this video, like and subscribe, and turn on the notification bell to be notified every single time we're live and every single time we post a video for you guys. If you'd like to join the Discord, you can join the Discord in the chat down below. Also, if you want to watch my new documentary, Unwoke Inc., it's at PragerU.com. You can check it out there and sign up for my email and newsletter by going to the description down below, clicking the link. We're going to be giving away mugs soon. Again, I think 5 more to people who are on the list who have signed up for the email and newsletter, which will give you PragerU updates, my updates, and a little blurb every Friday that I write about what's going on in my life. Thank you guys so much for watching. Leave your thoughts in the chat down below how you feel about the new Oscars rules. I'm sure there's some points we may have missed, so I would love to hear from you. And we'll have a new video out for you tomorrow. We'll see you then.